Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we are going to explore the evolution of the video game industry and how the current environment has changed the way that we all interact with video games. We'll also touch on an evolution of the industry and where it goes from here. So I do have with me on the line this morning Reed Gilligan, Equity Associate Analyst Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So Reed, welcome back to Top of the Morning. Great to be with you today and looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Glad to be here.
So, Reed, I know there's a lot we want to get through, and maybe it would be helpful if we can begin by having you walk us through how the industry itself has evolved over the years and decades. I know we've seen many iconic games, many iconic gaming consoles. So maybe walk us through a bit of a history.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I grew up playing the Nintendo 64, the GameCube, the Xbox. I don't know what you grew up with, but I'm definitely not the first generation of a gamer. So it really started in the 1950s with the likes of Pong. It moved into arcades, then it moved into the household through multiple generations of consoles and gaming PCs. Then the emergence of the smartphone really put the equivalent of a PC into everyone's pocket, and that really increased gaming exposure and interest even further. And today, it's evolved into one of the leading forms of entertainment globally.
And Reed, you mentioned a few of those gaming consoles. I'm familiar with a couple of them, of course, PlayStation, Nintendo 64, and more recently, Xbox. Maybe you can spend a few moments, Reed, just walking us through what the current scope and scale of the video game industry is like today.
So just to provide some scale, the global video game industry revenues generated around $150 billion last year with over 2.5 billion gamers. To put that into context, that dwarfs the only $40 billion global box office revenues last year. And diving into an example, the highest grossing video game pulled in more than double that of the highest grossing movie, which just kind of speaks to the power of video games. Breaking into segments, we see smartphone gaming generate around half of global industry revenues, while consoles and PCs are around a quarter each.
So, Reed, what about the industry's growth outlook? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, the industry's grown at a pretty solid growth rate of around 9% annually over the past 3 years. Going forward, industry analysts expect it to slow down slightly, but remain pretty strong at around 8% annual growth for the next 3 years.
Now, Reed, I understand that the industry is in the midst of a transformation. So what might this transformation consist of, and what are the factors at play that are driving the shifts?
Yeah, so we're really seeing a transformation in the form of shifting revenue strategies. So I break it into three kind of strategies in the report, and it's, one is the traditional transaction, the purchase of the game. Now we see a strong emergence of live services through DLC or downloadable content and microtransactions. And then the third is subscription services. So the shift towards more live services and in-game purchases is a benefit for both parties, the consumer and then the gaming companies. For the consumer, it provides fresh content and more customization for their character, for their gaming experience. And then for the video game company, it extends the lifespan of the game, it increases revenue opportunities, and those opportunities come at higher margins in the live services and digital offerings. So we're seeing more and more companies be willing to give up short-term revenues to attract people to their games for more long-term opportunities through these live services. And just an example, we're seeing that in free-to-play options, and that's really common in these battle royale games.
So, Reed, you think about the current environment that we're in, this pandemic-driven, remote, stay-at-home environment, and from speaking to others, I know many are getting reacquainted with video games, spending more time at home, mm-hmm. or perhaps they're for the first time introducing themselves to different gaming platforms and interfaces. How has this all impacted the industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. From a market's perspective, I'm sure we all read the headlines and see that the video game stocks definitely benefited. They were one of the biggest pure play, stay-at-home environment type of basket trades. But from an industry perspective, we saw a spike in most major metrics that we follow for the industry. right off the bat, at the beginning of shelter in place or working from home, we saw an increase in hardware purchases, meaning console and PC purchases. And a lot of these purchases were new gamers, so it expanded the addressable market right off the bat. And anyone with kids knows hours spent playing games and money spent on games increased during this environment. And then finally, esports, or time spent watching others play video games, has become much more popular. Now, we don't expect these levels of engagement to be sustainable as people go back to work, as kids go back to school, but we do expect the industry to benefit from a more mainstream video game culture. And what I mean by that is people were introduced to video games. People watch video games for entertainment. So people are going to be choosing video games going forward as a major source of their entertainment, even after people go back to work and school.
Now, Reed, on a going forward basis, you think about some emerging trends in this space. And as you walked us through at the top of the conversation, over the decades, the video game industry has evolved a great deal. So as we look ahead, what are some emerging trends in this space to be mindful of?
Yeah, I would say the three major catalysts I'm watching are the next generation consoles, cloud gaming, and AR and VR. So the next generation consoles are coming out in November. So Microsoft's releasing a new Xbox, Sony's releasing a new PlayStation. These promise a big, powerful leap in computing and graphics. So it's an exciting opportunity for new gaming experiences. Cloud gaming allows anyone to play a game on any device without the big upfront purchase of a smartphone or a gaming PC or a gaming console. And instead, you pay a more reasonable monthly subscription fee to have access to a bunch of these games. And it's all just done through the cloud, so you don't have to download anything. And maybe not near term, but definitely longer term, we see augmented AR and virtual reality, VR, become much more mainstream as the technology progresses, as the price point comes down, and as more and more games are created specifically for that platform.
Reed, with every industry comes risks. So if we look at the video game industry, can you highlight some risks associated with this space that we all need to be aware of?
Yeah, Dan. So the three major risks I'm watching right now is competition, pipeline risk, and monetization fatigue. So the video game industry is highly competitive, and it can be easily disrupted. And it takes years and hundreds of millions of dollars to develop these AAA titles that you see making all the headlines, or your kids are spending a ton of time playing. So it makes missing on a title very costly. So it's important to have a strong and loyal consumer base for those big franchise games. Pipeline risk, as we talked about, the stay-at-home environment was beneficial for video game metrics, but it does cause a disruption as people work from home. And we are starting to see some games that are being pushed out. Their launch day is being pushed out because of the slowing down of kind of a pipeline progression. If we see that extend further and further into more and more games, that is something to be concerned about. Finally, monetization fatigue. Some forms of monetization are just receiving stronger pushback from consumers. The three major ones are loot boxes, pay-to-win mechanics, and then advertisements if done incorrectly.
Reed, maybe we can end on getting your current thinking and the Chief Investment Office's current thinking on the U.S. communication services sector, which the video game industry falls within. I know you and your colleague, Kevin Dineen, who covers comm services and U.S. IT, recently published an equity preference list update, and you've been referencing that report throughout our conversation. But sector speaking, what's your current thinking there?
Yeah, Dan, so we have a neutral view on the communication services sector. And as you said, Kevin and I have been on air a number of times speaking about the three key drivers of the sector being content, connectivity, and advertising. All three are experiencing strong secular trends, but they are facing near-term headwinds due to the pandemic. So it leaves us neutral on the sector.
And Reed, before I let you go, of course, I have to ask, what's your favorite video game?
Oh man, I think I have to go with either Mario Kart on Nintendo 64 or SSX Tricky, the snowboarding game I played as a kid. Just too many good memories.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many to choose from. For me, I think it's the Call of Duty franchise. I remember when COD 4 came out, maybe in 2008, and right around that time, Xbox Live was coming into play. And maybe that whole holiday week, we were off school, my brothers and I, we were just glued in front of that game for the whole week. It was a lot of fun. But Reed, it's been great catching up with you this morning. It's exciting to see how this industry has evolved and is continuing to evolve. A lot more to come, and I'm sure we'll have some follow-up conversations on this. But a great catching up with you on Top of the Morning, Reed, and we'll speak again soon.
Thanks, Dan.
And again, today we've been joined by Reed Gilligan, Equity Associate Analyst Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. There are many publications and blogs available now for you up on UBS Online Services, and that does include the most recent edition of the U.S. Communication Services Equity Preference List. Again, that is the publication that Reed has been making reference to during our conversation this morning. So if you are a client of UBS, simply reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of that publication. Though, as I mentioned, the publication is now also available up on UBS Online Services. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.